is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles. And when the sight of Adam Levine's nipples prompts more discussion than Super Bowl trophy number 6 for Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots, then two truths are self-evident. One, America has grown thoroughly sick of the Patriots. And two, the game, amid what is supposed to be a point-scoring revolution in the NFL, was sluggish, sloppy, defense-smothered, very old-school, and almost unwatchable at times. And to think the over-under actually closed at 56... It only missed by 40. But hey, in the sleepy aftermath of the lowest scoring of the 53 Super Bowls, be careful not to overlook an indelible landmark in sports history. Like them or not, Belichick and Brady just bookended two titles over 18 seasons. Six total, a magnificent achievement in a league designed to stymie even the thought of a generation-long dynasty that could amass 9 Super Bowl appearances in that span. They are now the oldest coach and quarterback to win Super Bowls, and in a digital world, they keep winning as an analog, right? Like some old monolithic compound standing taller than the shiny skyscrapers built beside them. Owner Robert Kraft, grabbing the microphone away from the Patriots' nemesis, Commissioner Roger Goodell, paid the best tribute to Belichick and Brady, who now have won 2 of the last 3 Super Bowls after narrowly missing a year ago.
Robert, 17 years ago, the Patriots won their first Super Bowl. This now makes 6 of these trophies that the Patriots have and 3 out of the last 5. Congratulations to you and Jonathan. Incredible organization, you great players and coaches. The Patriots are Super Bowl champs once again.
Patriots fans, this is your 6th championship in the last 18 years. Truly an unprecedented accomplishment, really managed by exceptional players and coaches to whom all of us forever grateful. But there is one constant throughout this whole 18 years. 2 men who are the best at whatever has been done in the history of the NFL. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. And through their hard work and great leadership, I am honored to say for the 6th time, we are all Patriots, and once again, the Patriots are world champions.
And you know what's crazier? The Patriots might not be done winning titles as America groans. The rest of the NFL tries to bury them and from every angle, yet they can't kill the New England beast.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
Given all the tears and warm embraces amid the love-in afterward, I mean, Belichick even had his granddaughter with him at the podium, The Patriots certainly were a family this season after so much animosity the previous season. The biggest takeaway is obvious: for all the exciting NFL buzz about monster offenses, prodigious young quarterbacks, and high-flying fireworks, Belichick won another championship and stifled evolution in the process with pure dinosaur principles, brute physicality, punishing the quarterback, and a meticulous attention to detail in devising an airtight defensive game plan. Never mind the poor aesthetics and one of the worst Super Bowls ever, the Patriots did not need to play a complete game because you knew from the minute a jittery Jared Goff threw an early pass into the turf that the Rams could not muster enough offense to compete. From the very start, Belichick, the defensive master, teaching a harsh lesson to Sean McVay, the offensive wunderkind, whose Rams managed one field goal and turned this game into one continuous Johnny Hecker punting reel. McVay might have his own coaching tree at age 33, but he was an overmatched millennial in this one. As predicted here in my own Romo Stradamus moment, the Patriots took aim on Goff and applied constant pressure for 60 minutes, sacking him four times, knocking him down repeatedly, and forcing him into that inevitable game-ending interception. I called that too. When the Rams were trying to generate points in the fourth quarter. I'm not trying to be Tony here. I'm just telling you, I called it. It happened. That pick came off a blitz called by defensive coordinator Brian Flores, who today became the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. If you can't beat the Patriots, you raid them. And the Rams had no choice but to keep throwing, even with Goff putting up an unsightly QB rating of 13.4, because the Patriots shut down the running game. Or did the Rams shut down their own running game? Except for a couple of brief spurts, Todd Gurley remained an ongoing mystery, an all-pro reduced to splitting time with C.J. Anderson, with McVay saying Gurley was not bothered by any injury, meaning McVay has really screwed up the situation and he didn't give Gurley enough chances to get going in this football game. He said he would, he did early, and then Gurley disappeared, and there's C.J. Anderson. Is McVay so hooked on his development of Goff that he is now de-emphasizing Gurley? That is foolish. The Patriots made the game's biggest plays defensively, including the clinching interception by Stephon Gilmore, who applied lights-out coverage all night on Brandon Cooks. You had that mammoth touchdown-saving play by Jason McCourty, another huge play from Daron Harmon, and constant pressure from Dante Hightower and Trey Flowers. You could have made a case for the entire Patriots D as the MVP, and here was Belichick, the greatest of all time.
You know, this is just a great day for our football team. Obviously, Mr. Kraft put this all together, but it's all about the players. These guys worked so hard all year. They just competed every week, and they competed today like champions. They played like champions. Everybody counted us out from the beginning of the season to midseason, but we're still here.
And that defensive game plan, mind explaining, Hoodie?
Well, we just felt like we had to put something together that would neutralize the running game and their big play action passes on early downs. That's really where they've killed people all year, is right. The 120-some explosive plays that they've had. So we felt like if we could, you know, make them drive it, make them earn it, similar to what the Lions did to them, to make them, you know, just run a lot of plays and get them in third down, we felt like we'd have a chance to get them off the field on third down. And, you know, ultimately we were able to do that. And really the play of the game defensively was the blitz, Brian Flores called the blitz, and Gilmore played the play perfectly and just went up and high-pointed the ball, and that was obviously a big play for us in the game.
The voters did get the MVP right. Julian Edelman, on a day when Brady was inconsistent off his game, Edelman remarkable in consistently finding seams and getting open. He's like a pinball out there, even when the Rams knew he was coming. Edelman is the very symbol of the Belichick way, an undersized college quarterback from Kent State who evolved into a slippery, magical, highly reliable receiver, Brady's so-called little brother, and a potential Hall of Famer, although don't forget that steroids bust. Everybody wants to put football players in the Hall of Fame and forget about PEDs. He had a PED bust, missed four games, okay? Don't forget that as we revel in Julian mania right here. But he was amazing in this game. Edelman began his week the previous Sunday night by taking a stroll by himself late at night through some of Atlanta's roughest sections, not far from the team hotel, striking up chats with some of the locals. A writer just arriving in town, driving to the hotel, passed a bearded guy in the street that looked like Edelman, because it was Edelman, walking by himself. How do I put this politely? I think he's eccentric. That's the word for Edelman, among other things. He's a little crazy as well, but 7 nights after that stroll, he was at a loss for words, making his own history.
It's hard to, that's for sure. I'm getting to live out a dream, so it's pretty surreal right now. I think everything happens for a reason. I was always taught as a young boy that, you always just got to work hard, work as hard as you can, put in the extra time, and we'll see where it goes, and worry about what you got on your plate at that time. And, that's what I've tried to do.
And just as we were asking where the hell are Sony Michel and Rob Gronkowski, they came alive late with the exclamation points. Even on an uneven day, you don't rule out a Brady offense, and the Patriots did come through with that late touchdown when needed. Here was Brady, also the greatest of all time.
It means a lot. There's been a lot of guys a part of this journey with this team, and it's just been so fun to be a part of it, and just do your best every day. And coach makes it it's a challenging football environment. His pressure is always on, and for moments like this, because you got to rise to the occasion. The reality is, you get in these games, you just got to find a way to win, and we played well in the end, and that's what we needed.
You must wonder, as I do, why the Patriots never burn out, why they never succumb as opponents trot out all sorts of creative trends and dazzling stars, and here they are still winning championships. Your answer? Belichick's paradigm never has changed, and he continues to scour the universe for players who fit that paradigm as much intellectually as physically. I might argue that the Rams have more talent on their roster, but Belichick is the greatest in projecting a player's place in his system and maximizing that player within the team framework. He defines and refines hidden gems like no coach we've ever seen in football. He's also the most demanding of their time, of their focus, of their film study. And those weeks and months they spend in the team compound in Foxborough are the most intense of any player's football life. This season was different than others in that the Patriots struggled with a losing road record and bad losses to non-playoff teams. But Belichick ended up doing his best work maybe ever from mid-December to February. And here they are again, the greatest coach-QB collaboration in football history, sharing a hug afterward at midfield when it wasn't long ago when they were feuding over Brady's mysterious trainer, Alex Guerrero, and Belichick was trying to groom Jimmy Garoppolo for the job. Remember that? Sure, we're tiring of them, but we shouldn't be so jaded not to admire what they've done. I know they've had cheating scandals. Still, are you kidding me? I mean, how old were you when Brady and Belichick won their first title? How has your life changed since then? Think about that. This is astonishing, and yet a lot of people are just yawning and they're bored. I think we need to sit back and give the Patriots their due. This goes for Boston sports in general, much as I don't want to do this. This was the 12th championship in 18 years for that city's four major teams, and for all the mean and unfair attention that goes with performing in that region, I think that pressure effectively creates an urgency for teams to win there so they can avoid that wrath. In those 18 years, Boston's four teams have made the postseason 55 of the 71 seasons they've played. At present, the Patriots and the Red Sox are reigning champions. The Celtics could play in the NBA Finals. The Bruins could play in the Stanley Cup Finals. Kids who grow up in New England think every season is supposed to end with a duck boat parade. And the king of that prosperity is Brady, who has surpassed all the Boston sports legends, Bird, Russell, Orr, Big Poppy, even Ted Williams, in local magnitude. Nationally, though, Brady lost cred during Deflategate and turns people off with his Anthony Robbins-like shtick of weird diets and all that junk, Brady does reign as the most decorated team sport athlete of the 21st century. He's also the most saturated athlete of all time, having been watched by an average of 101 million viewers during his 9 Super Bowl appearances. It's hard to sit there and dislike Brady. I think we're all left to marvel at him, dazed by this entire experience, recalling how a skinny, untoned kid who was drafted 199th in the 2000 NFL draft would build one of the greatest sports legacies in the history of planet Earth. What possibly could drive Brady to accomplish more than he already has? Well, 15 minutes after the game, Vegas established Kansas City as next season's favorites. Already Belichick and Brady frothing at the mouth. And oh, there's this, Brady speaking afterward with Jim Nance.
Come back. How will you reset and do it all over again?
Look at this. Yay! How could this not motivate you? This is what it's all about. And to have this little girl here, this little boy, and my other boys around here.
If the Rams were trying to sell suites and tickets in what will be the most expensive stadium experience in NFL history, this was not the way to impress a lukewarm Los Angeles. McVay does have his flaws, and this girly mess must be addressed soon, because even an average coach should know not to de-emphasize a gifted running back. He keeps saying Gurley wasn't bothered by a knee problem, and Gurley said the same, so unless Gurley was causing problems behind the scenes, and there have been no such reports, this is a crisis squarely on McVay, the boy wonder. He reached the Super Bowl way ahead of schedule, but he was schooled by Belichick, as McVay acknowledged.
Yeah, they've done a good job with that, you know, really with the stunts and different things. And then, you know, they mixed it up. You know, they had played almost exclusively some man coverage principles and decided to take away. And really in the early downs, all they ended up doing was, you know, playing some single high buzz structures and some quarters principles. And then, you know, third down, they had their designers and things like that. But they did a great job. It was a great game plan. And, you know, no other way to say it, but I got out coached tonight.
Gurley will want some answers in the offseason about playing time, but not quite yet.
You know, great season. Everybody's, you know, not too much talking, but, you know, just a great season by us. And, you know, we all let each other down. Whenever my name's called to get in, I'm ready. But, you know, like I said, you know, we got a good running back in CJ. So, obviously, he's going to come in as well. And, you know, I just got to take advantage of my opportunities when I get the chance as well.
So, will the Rams return to a Super Bowl? That's a good question. They shouldn't have even been here this time, gifted by a historically bad officiating call. And New Orleans, I think, would have given the Patriots a better game. The Rams have been fortunate to load up on one-year high-priced veterans because Goff is on a rookie contract. But they had to pay Gurley and Aaron Donald last offseason, and now they must see if Goff learns from his comeuppance, knowing he is given to spurts of erratic passing. Is Jared Goff all that? He's awfully inconsistent. If Boston wins everything, L.A. is now a runner-up town with the Rams and the Dodgers. Runners-up, which does not play well in Hollywood. You've got to win in Hollywood. You can't finish second. And then you have the Lakers in year one of LeBron. They are an internal mess right now with the embattled coach Luke Walton preaching to his players about unselfish play. And then you have veterans like JaVale McGee and Michael Beasley firing back at him in the locker room in an ugly blow-up the other night. Clearly, LeBron is trying to get Walton fired as Magic Johnson tries in vain to acquire Anthony Davis. As for the Dodgers, they signed A.J. Pollock, not Bryce Harper. And yes, people are upset today that Adam Levine removed his shirt, exposing his nipples and his bare torso during Maroon 5's otherwise tame apolitical performance during the halftime show. They're wondering why it's okay for Levine to show those nipples when Janet Jackson was excoriated for it. Well, the answer there, Janet should not have been excoriated for it, but society has changed significantly in 15 years. If that were a female artist, I don't think she would be excoriated nearly as much as Janet was. Although I wonder if the NFL will say something to Adam Levine about that. You know, they sign these elaborate contracts. I don't think the NFL really wanted to see all that skin, Adam half naked, and, you know, that. I can tell you why he did it, okay? You saw all the tats on his body, and this was obviously a bubblegum singer trying to land some street cred. And he takes off his shirt and shows all these tats, but he's singing Sugar. You know, I'm supposed to take this seriously? It was not a good look. Not that the halftime show was any better. I've been fortunate to see Prince in the Rain in Miami. I've seen U2 after 9/11. I've seen The Stones, Paul McCartney, Lady Gaga, Madonna. This was the lamest of all, much like the game, right? Most of the commercials were lame, too, such as that Andy Warhol thing. He's trying to eat a Burger King Whopper in the 1970s. I did like the T-Mobile texting ads, some of the sensitive ads involving kids. But I keep going back to what a buddy of mine said. He said, most of the people in the advertising industry are stoned. When I watched these ads yesterday, I'm thinking, these people are all stoned. Who else comes up with this stuff? It just was thoroughly an unimpressive day. If we're looking at creativity in America and the music industry, advertising, media, you have that crush of media on Belichick and Brady afterward. Poor Tracy Wolfson can't even get to Brady. All these idiots down there. It looked like America was completely in chaos yesterday or bored out of its skull, one or the other. And you can take it from there. I'm not doing any political talk today. But I am asking this. Was it worth it for Maroon 5 to buck the solidarity of the Colin Kaepernick-led racial movement and play this show? I say in the end, no, because now Levine has ticked off both feminists and Kaepernick supporters. Of course, many black artists either rejected the NFL's offer to perform or spoke out against those who did perform, including rappers Travis Scott and Big Boy. I do admire Levine for following his heart, fulfilling a dream, and ignoring criticism from the Kaepernick camp. Kaepernick is acting like King Colin. You know, I reign over this kingdom, and don't you dare do this. And I have a problem with that on many levels, including the cowardly fact that Kaepernick rarely shows his face and never does any interviews, but he's hovering up there. Don't cross me. Who are you? You're Colin Kaepernick. You were a hit quarterback in 2012, and then you become a pretty bad quarterback in 2015, an okay quarterback in 2016. Now you're King Colin. I'm not doing that today. I'm just telling you, I don't think in the end Maroon 5's career was well served by the way this ended up here. In the end, the halftime show should be about premium entertainment. This show was far from it. Let's move on to the NBA, which now stands for Nothing But Anthony, as in Davis, or maybe Nothing But Arrogance, as in Kyrie Irving. The procession of superstars forcing trades and trying to form super teams is now a runaway train in this league, and the headlines are indeed a looming crisis for the NBA. I guess in one sense, at least, Adam Silver has to love the buzz, which is ideal in a league ablaze in social media traffic. But here's the rub. When LeBron James and his agent create a power base in L.A. and are trying to lure Davis to the Lakers a full year and a half before he reaches free agency, and when the Knicks have traded the unhappy unicorn Kristaps Porzingis to Dallas to free up two max spots for perhaps Irving and Kevin Durant, then yes, this is a big city chess game that leaves out maybe two-thirds of the NBA's franchises. And it does lead to some bizarre scenes out there, such as Porzingis warning Knicks fans in an Instagram post to, quote, stay woke, unquote, about owner James Dolan, or Laker fans in Klay Thompson's own building, Oracle Arena, chanting that they want Klay to sign in L.A., echoing other such chants around the league for other players.
Which gave him the advantage to drive the closeout.
Thompson getting selected to his fifth consecutive All-Star game as an All-Star reserve.
If the commissioner truly wants a league of competitive balance, he'd be fighting these manipulative attempts to turn teams in L.A. and New York into powerhouses. But he's not saying a word right now, meaning evidently he wants it this way and cares more about appeasing maybe his TV partners than he does the fans in medium in small markets. These days, a lesser market has to be brilliant in, say, projecting a teenaged Giannis Antetokounmpo as a star, as Milwaukee did, or adeptly maneuvering to keep Paul George around for the long term, as Oklahoma City did, to have any chance at all at contending. Otherwise, the NBA becomes the English Premier League, relegation heavy, and the same five or six teams comprise the elite while reducing all the other franchises to irrelevance. As the trade deadline approaches on Thursday, the Davis camp, which I guess we could call the LeBron slash Rich Paul slash Lakers camp, which is tampering by its very nature, is meeting resistance from the New Orleans Pelicans, who yawned at the Lakers' initial offer for Davis. This prompted Davis's father, probably ordered by Rich Paul, to say his son doesn't want to play in Boston after the way the Celtics treated Isaiah Thomas and other players, chewing them up and spitting them out. Thus, by doing so, the Davis camp hopes Boston is discouraged enough to back burner their Davis desires. Besides, at this point, the Celtics have their own dumpster fire in the person of Irving, who told a home crowd before a preseason game, remember this, that he'd be re-signing with the Celtics, but that turned out to be premature, if not fake news altogether, and that Irving has become an insufferable prima donna this season, disrupting the very chemistry the Celtics built last season without Irving and Gordon Hayward. Now, it could be the Celtics don't want Irving for the long term, and Irving doesn't want the Celtics either, with Irving angering fans with this exchange.
I mean, well, at the end of the day, I'm going to do what I feel is best for my career, and, you know, that's just where it stands. And my focus this season is winning the championship with the Boston Celtics. You know, obviously we had goals coming into the season, and primary goal is to win championships, so that's where my focus is.
Has your mindset shifted, though, in regards to re-signing with Boston, like the announcement?
Ask me July 1st.
Upon hearing that, Knicks fans showered Irving with "We want Kyrie" chants at Madison Square Garden, after which Kyrie got testy and blamed the media for creating a distraction. Who created the distraction here? You did, Kyrie Irving.
Hear the chant. You did hear the chants, Kyrie.
Are you reaching for it right now?
No. I couldn't hear everything.
Everybody heard it. Like, we, come on, man. Like, come on, man.
Do you laugh at all when you hear that? I mean, it's a lot of guys get cheered. Good players get cheered when they come here. That's a little different.
Like I said, it's nothing but a distraction at this point. Like, you know what I mean? Like I said, I'm appreciative of the cheers. I'm appreciative of the fan support that I get around the league in every arena. Obviously, being back home, what has been said, I repeat myself again, what has been said, what has been circling around in terms of extra commentary, I kind of figured it was going to be something like that tonight. I'm just happy we got the win, and I'm ready to go back to Boston.
I think you know the answer to that, man. It's just, you know, obviously you would hope it would quiet down, but like I said, it doesn't help when, you know, across the league, you know, it's just outside noise again, and my name gets thrown into it, and then, you know, conversation, speculations, everybody's worried about their credibility. I don't know how this media empire works. I know it's a bunch of nonsense to me. So I have a focus in winning the championship this year, and that's where my focus is going to stay. So, you know, even me saying something like that is not concrete enough for anybody. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, I got to go home and take care of my family and friends, and that's the stuff where it really matters for me. you know, loving the game of basketball. That's where it's always going to be. I didn't do this for the media. I didn't do this for the money. I didn't do this for the fans. I did it because I love the game, and I work extremely hard in my craft, and I want to be one of the greatest ever. So that's where my focus is. You know what I mean? It's going to come. I'm appreciative how, you know, grateful I am. I'm grateful for all the, you know, everybody identify how talented I am, who wants to play with me. I'm appreciative of that. But at the end of the day, like I said this morning, I'm going to make the best decision for me and my family, and that's how it's going to go.
As for Davis, the Pelicans would be wise to sit him the rest of the season if he isn't traded by Thursday so as to protect their asset. They've already scrubbed Davis from their pregame hype video in the arena. The Pelicans general manager, Del Demps, comes from the tree of Greg Popovich, who loathes the idea of superstars ending up with the Lakers and made damn sure Kawhi Leonard was shipped east, hell, out of the country to Toronto. So these political battles going on surrounding Anthony Davis, it's dominating news. The All-Star game is an afterthought. Even the playoff picture is an afterthought. It's all about maneuvering agents, superstars, haves, have-nots. It's blurry. It's not good for the league. In the end, as you know, Davis can sign with the Lakers as an unrestricted free agent in July of 2020. But until then, his life could be trains, planes, automobiles, sitting on the bench in his civvies as a team such as Boston, Toronto, or Milwaukee, I guess, could trade for him with one season in mind. That's the word out of Boston, that the Celtics would give up a couple of number one picks, maybe a player, even for one season of Davis, hoping they can convince him to stay for the long term. That's what Toronto is trying to do with Kawhi Leonard. Here's Davis, a good kid caught up in a ruthless business.
Why do you want to be traded, Anthony?
I feel like it's my time. You know, I gave the city, organization, fans, you know, everything I feel like I could. Don't know how long I'm going to play this game. People's careers are short. You know, and I feel like it's my time to move on.
Was there an ultimatum issued about wanting to go to the Lakers?
No, I never gave my representation never gave Pelicans, you know, a destination or anything, so I'm not sure where that's coming from. Maybe the connection, you know, with my representation, but he never gave Pelicans a destination.
So you would be willing to play elsewhere other than one place?
It's on the Pelicans.
Anthony, did you and your representation talk about the fact that if you're not traded by the deadline, you potentially may have to sit out the rest of this season and won't be able to play?
My intentions is to play. I've been working to get my finger back healthy. It's a tough situation, but you know, my intention is to still play. And when I'm able to play, I plan on suiting up. My reputation didn't, you know, drop the story or leak the story or anything like that. Someone else had gave it to a reporter called my agent and, you know, asked him, was this true? So we never wanted to leak it to the media. I feel like I'm in my prime right now. I'm playing at an elite level. And, you know, I think that, you know, I want to make sure that I take advantage of that.
How much does legacy matter to you?
A ton. You know, I've heard that question before, legacy over money. And, I'm all about legacy. You know, the money comes and goes. You know, when I get done playing or leave this earth, you know, what is my legacy going to be?
You know how crazy this big market manipulation game is? Knicks fans are now hoping a tank job leads to the number one pick in the draft, either by an NBA-directed fix. Just kidding. Maybe not. Or just pure luck, which have these fans drooling over the prospect of Zion Williamson coming in the draft. Even Williamson at Duke is facing questions, which is absolutely absurd.
I mean, to the fans, I appreciate the love that, you know, they're showing to want me to come to their team, but I mean, I'm still in college. I'm enjoying the process, and whichever team draft me, I'll be ready to work. And, you know, just love the city. Wow. I mean, it would be dope to play with KD and Kyrie, but like I said, I'm enjoying college, and whichever team draft me, I'll be ready to play hard and, you know, work.
You know, come on, can't we just let him go to psychology 101 class like a normal 18-year-old? This is not something I have said lately, if ever, but I'll say it. Kudos to the NCAA. Is it possible the monolithic mopes who run college basketball no longer have a blind eye about the mass corruption in their house? The NCAA suspended Kansas forward Silvio D'Souza for the remainder of this season and all of next season because his guardian accepted illicit benefits from a dirty Adidas rep, TJ Gasnola. The action shows that the NCAA is willing, after all, to punish guilty programs beyond Louisville and Rick Pitino and a blue blood program at that, Kansas. The AD there, Jeff Long, and Coach Bill Self are livid, but please stop the whining and just admit that your sport is filthy on all levels. And if the Kansas administration has any pride in academia, it will fire its own salvo at King Basketball by getting rid of Bill Self. Let's hope for the sake of ethics and morals here that the NCAA is just getting started in punishing wrongdoers, but I really do doubt it. All right, the buzz will go in here. The buzz came on the first. Now it's time for the buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joining the program. Chris, Patriots are champions again, six times, which begs the question. Has the Belichick-Brady reign become so monotonous that you no longer care? Or are you able to appreciate what they've achieved? Bookend titles over an 18-year span and six championships total.
Jay, it's not so much that I no longer care. I guess I'll no longer doubt it. I'll no longer think that they can't win a Super Bowl. As much as my other team, if you will, the Eagles, were able to pull it off 2 years ago, I really thought the Rams would at least give them a fight and nothing. So I'm appreciative to see the history. I think it's incredible what they've done. And to think that they didn't win for 10 years. Their last Super Bowl of the first part was in 2005. Then it picks up again in 2015. And then to see what they've rattled off later in life is pretty remarkable, and I think it's remarkable to watch, and I agree with everybody that says we'll never see it again. I would love to see somebody else from the AFC, but there's a part of me that kind of wants to see curiosity. Can they actually do it again? And I think the answer is yes.
Chris, your Rams didn't distinguish themselves with Boy Wonder Sean McVay blaming himself for the loss, and rightly so. Knowing the Dodgers have been World Series runners-up two straight years and the Lakers are a mess in year one of LeBron, is L.A. becoming Heartbreak City? And would you have preferred the Rams not gone to the Super Bowl instead of just managing a puny field goal?
I knew, and I've said it here, that Jared Goff was going to tank at some point. I picked against them with the Cowboys. I thought the Saints would probably win. They got past those games. And then, boom, Jared Goff. The Jared Goff that everybody remembers from his first season came out yet again. And it's the Jared Goff we saw against the Lions, the Eagles, the Bears, coming off that amazing Kansas City Monday night game. Something happened to this team after the bye week. I don't know exactly what it is, because Gurley was off in that game too, that Monday night game in Los Angeles at the Coliseum. So Gurley's been hurt for a while. Goff, there was something off, and it finally caught up to him. And it caught up to him in the worst way, to your point. Nothing but a putrid field goal. I mean, is that what you expected from what many people thought was, if not the top, one of the top offenses in the NFL? Disgusting, really. And L.A., you know, losing to the World Series to the Red Sox, then losing to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, that's rough. So the Lakers better go and make the city feel better by getting Anthony Davis, or at least being in the Anthony Davis sweepstakes this summer. But rough, rough times for L.A.
And finally, Chris, do you see hypocrisy in Adam Levine going shirtless when Janet Jackson was crucified for Nipplegate?
Since then, Jay, I feel like the world's grown up a little bit when it comes to sex. So I feel that we're all a little less uptight when it comes to sexuality. Everything else, nobody finds fun. You know, you notice it in the Super Bowl ads. People, there's less daring stuff. People are kind of just hitting shots up the middle and trying to keep it between the hedges, if you will. You didn't really see a lot of crazy stuff. But when it comes to sex, I feel the world of social media and everything has calmed that down a little bit, at least I think. I mean, kids have an app, Snapchat. many adults do too, that's dedicated to one purpose, and I think we all know what that is. So I feel like Adam Levine taking his shirt off in 2019 was a little less jarring than Janet doing it in, what, was that 2004? At least my opinion.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Brady and Belichick managed a victory on another front with their letter-writing campaign, resulting in a Hall of Fame selection for longtime Patriots cornerback Ty Law. Like it or not, the Patriots' run has stretched for almost two decades, and their place in history should be reflected by numbers in Canton, though it's going to be more difficult for that franchise than other dynastic franchises because of the Belichick system. I can't argue with any of the selections over the weekend, including first-year nominees Tony Gonzalez, Ed Reed, and Champ Bailey, and the ailing Broncos owner Pat Bowlen. I also have no problem with Patrick Mahomes as the NFL MVP, despite his loss in the AFC title game, and Saquon Barkley over Baker Mayfield for Rookie of the Year. Gee, I'm just satisfied all the way around here. No complaints. How often does that happen? Rudy Gobert might be 7'1 and a defensive beast for the Utah Jazz, but he wasn't too big to break down in tears after being snubbed for an All-Star game berth. To me, it's honorable, a good thing to care so much about his profession and a meaningless game to shed tears in front of the media. Yet, in the immature NBA world, Gobert was mocked by the likes of Draymond Green. Oh, Draymond isn't a crybaby? The all-time crybaby. And even Andre Iguodala, who I thought was a mature guy. They're mocking him for crying. Gobert, however, got the last laugh.
I got some tweets from, well, some Golden State Warriors, Draymond and Andre, and some, you know, fans as well.
Draymond, did you tweet? What do you say? As long as he doesn't post anything on Snapchat, we're good.
What's your reaction to, even if it's not Draymond, fans kind of, I don't know, criticizing you for what happened this morning?
Well, I just said what was on my mind, and I got a little emotional when I started talking about my mom, but, you know, nothing wrong. I mean, it happens, and it'll probably happen again. You know, it's I care, and I care about winning, I care about this team, and, you know, it's I just said what was on my mind, you know, and what came from the heart.
Snapchat, of course, is where Green posted a shot of his wiener. Touché! And just as Brady's popularity rating has suffered because of his perceived relationship with President Trump, might Tiger Woods be pushing his luck as well? The sports world widely embraced Woods during his triumphant comeback last season, yet there he was Saturday, smiling on the first tee at Trump National with Jack Nicklaus and Trump. Said Woods, quote, "He's the president of the United States. You have to respect the office. You might like or dislike the personality or the politics, but we all must respect the office," end quote. Try telling that to the anti-MAGA types, Tiger.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
Those thumps you hear are the sounds of Commissioner Roger Goodell and the NFL owners backslapping each other. Yes, it was a successful bounce-back season for the league with robust viewership ratings reflecting offensive explosions, young superstars, close games, an emphasis on safety, fewer crime stories, and a minimum of national anthem politics. But please do not make the mistake of assuming this league is back. And better than ever, I'm reading some of this right now. It's cringeworthy. Just because business is good with legalized gambling only helping to drive the meter now. If Goodell is a smart man and wisdom never has been his strong suit, he will remind the owners that football's existential crises are permanent and they have to keep addressing them. The stories of players afflicted with CTE continue to pummel the league, including the heartbreaking story of one of the greatest Atlanta Falcons, Tommy Nobis. And now the league must deal with untold numbers of retired players battling opioid addictions after becoming hooked on painkillers while playing in the NFL. Then you have the millions of parents who do not want their sons playing football, a group, shockingly enough, that now includes President Trump, who only, what, last year complained the NBA had become too soft, but now Trump, staying straight and narrow, always consistent, that man, now says he won't encourage his son, Barron, to play football because, quote, it's a dangerous sport, unquote. So what is it, soft or dangerous? What's going to save the NFL is the very vice it fought for decades, gambling, which is entering, as you know, a legalized phase in America with nearly 23 million Americans betting about $6 billion on the game Sunday, all of which feeds another health crisis, problem gambling, something the NFL has not addressed, nor have the other leagues, as sports prepares for the onslaught. And the NFL in particular prepares for the Raiders' move to Las Vegas, which also will host the NFL draft coming up and a possible Super Bowl in maybe 2025. The gambling influence only will intensify with entrepreneurs in a dying media industry smelling blood and actually doing news stories on its own gambling action, such as the flurry of seven-figure bets on the Rams over the weekend. One transaction was done at the South Point Casino, which promptly reported the wager on its own news site, Vegas Stats and Information Network. The acronym for that operation, by the way, is VSIN, as in Vegas Sin. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never ever let anybody mute you in life.